Morning. We have two cases scheduled for argument on our 9 o'clock docket, one on the 10:30. We've been told the attorneys for the 9 o'clock cases have announced ready, so we'll call the first case, Harvey Davison, Ph.D. versus James Nicholson.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. Sunny Smith on behalf of Dr. Self. We are here today asking the court to reverse the decision of the trial court in this case. This is an interlocutory appeal involving a Chapter 74 expert report issue. We have challenged in the trial court and are challenging here today two things. One, the qualifications of the author to give the opinions in question in this case with regard to both standard of care and causation. To the conclusory causation opinions made by the author. The allegations in this case revolve around evaluation and treatment of James Nicholson at the Davidson Clinic over a five-year span of time from February 2003 to February 2008. In February 2003, Mr. Davidson was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder and prescribed Adderall by a physician other than Dr. Self. Over the course of the next 4 years, Mr. Nicholson continued to take the Adderall prescribed by physicians other than Dr. Self. Dr. Self's involvement in Mr. Nicholson's care occurred between May 2007 and November 2007, almost 6-month period. Subsequent to November 2007, in December, Dr. Murkow, another defendant, starts to prescribe Adderall and care for Mr. Nicholson. In April 2008, Mr. Nicholson was taken to the Austin State Hospital and hospitalized by sheriff's officers where he was, a complaint was he was a danger to himself. The records show at that time that he was abusing Adderall, and after he would take all the Adderall, when it ran out, he would start using alcohol. He was subsequently seen at the mental health hospital in Austin where the records show he was snorting Adderall 70 to 90 milligrams per day. The petition alleges a continued prescription of Adderall without proper evaluation or supervision, which resulted in Adderall addiction or psychosis. The standard of review for this court is abuse of discretion with regard to the qualifications and with regard to the question of the adequacy of the report. From the petition, the narrow negligent issue in this case appears to be the continued prescription of Adderall without proper supervision. Even assuming for the moment that Rushing is qualified to discuss standard of care and causation, which I'll discuss in a moment, the report fails to address how the actions of Dr. Self are causally related to Mr. Nicholson's alleged addiction or psychosis. First off, none of the paragraphs that deal with causation actually mention Dr. Self. In one part of the report, Rushing asserts that Self failed to examine Mr. Nicholson in an appropriate, timely manner. At a later point in the report, he states that Mr. Nicholson suffered an amphetamine addiction due to the failure to examine Mr. Nicholson every 90 days. There is nothing in the report to explain the basis of Rushing's opinions on causation. Specifically, he can't get from the alleged breach, the failure to examine every 90 days, to Adderall, psychosis, and addiction. There's no necessary chain of causation. There's no medical detail on how Adderall or the failure to monitor a patient on Adderall caused the alleged addiction or psychosis, or in this case, specifically as to Dr. Self, how her prescriptions of Adderall or her monitoring or involvement in Mr. Nicholson's care caused Adderall addiction or psychosis.
Well, tell me what you think the report should have said. Under your theory, what should the report have said to establish causation?
The report should have said if Dr. Self would have seen Mr. Nicholson every 90 days, this is what would have been revealed. And she could have taken an action based on what was revealed during those examinations and what the treatment options were. For example, she could have seen, and I don't know medically exactly how this would come to pass, but she could have seen his addiction. She could have recognized signs or symptoms of addiction and could have treated it, stopped the Adderall, stopped tapering it off, changed him to a new medication. But there's no kind of link in this report that links anything Dr. Self did or didn't do to the ultimate result in this case, the addiction or psychosis. And there's no explanation of how you go from an addiction to psychosis. At what point in time would the patient needed to have been diagnosed and or treated to prevent the psychosis and addiction? And how would this have altered the outcome? This is over a 5-year period, 2003 to 2008. Dr. Self has a brief involvement in Mr. Nicholson's care. There's no differentiation between what was happening in 2003, 4, 5, 6, 7. We finally get to Dr. Self's care, where she sees him for less than 6 months. And I would point out, she actually did see him twice during those 6 months, and he was examined by another physician during those 6 months. So he was seen by three physicians during the six-month period of time that Dr. Self cared for Mr. Nicholson. And then after 2007, he was prescribed Adderall and assessed by another physician. And the plaintiff's petition and Dr. Rushing's report lumps everyone together and does not say at what point in time something should have been done or should have been recognized to change the outcome in this case. With regard to qualifications, the case law is pretty clear that in assessing qualifications, the expert must be familiar with the specific issue before the court. That, in this case, we assert is the continued prescription of Adderall without proper supervision. That's what plaintiff has alleged in their petition. Rushing does not state he's familiar with or has any experience in prescribing Adderall or to attention deficit disorder patients or how such prescription may or may not lead to amphetamine addiction or psychosis.
But doesn't he say he has seen patients that have Adderall use? And he also talks about the fact that he's familiar with amphetamine use and some of its effects.
He does state that he has, in the report, he states that he has three patients in the many that he sees that were actually prescribed by another physician, a psychiatrist. He does not state that he actually sees them to monitor their Adderall use or the effects thereof. And he does not demonstrate that he is familiar with the cause or causes of the addiction or psychosis and would be able to recognize a sign or symptom and what he would do in that particular instance to stop that patient that's on Adderall from progressing to addiction or psychosis. For all of these reasons, we ask the court to reverse the trial court's decision and remand this case consistent with the Leland opinion.
Thank you, Ms. Smith.
Thank you.
Mr. Lunningham.
May it please the court. I'm David Lunningham. I represent Dr. Davison, a psychologist. On behalf of Dr. Davison, we have raised 3 points, and I want to focus on one of those points in the time that I have, and that is that even if you looked at Dr. Rushing's report and Dr. Helge's report, and Dr. Helge is a psychologist, if you looked at the two of them together, you would not find a viable opinion on causation or the causal link as to any act or omission by Dr. Davison. It is true that Dr. Helge's report does set forth an opinion as to the standard of care. And in fact, Dr. Helge's report goes on to attempt in a conclusory manner to make a statement about causation. However, as this court knows, under Chapter 74, 351, R5C, a psychologist is not qualified by rule to render an opinion as to causation. Only a physician may render such an opinion. So Dr. Helge's report standing alone does not and cannot provide this missing element of causation. So then we turn to an examination of Dr. Rushing's report. Dr. Rushing in his report makes two passing references to Dr. Davison. Both of these are in the factual recitation section. And Dr. Rushing at no point renders an opinion as to causation pertaining to Dr. Davison. He doesn't refer to Dr. Helge's report and really try and link it that way either. So in looking at Dr. Rushing's report, again, even assuming he were qualified, he is giving opinions, Dr. Rushing is, and his entire report speaks to the conduct of physicians, his opinion that the physicians should have seen Mr. Nicholson in this 90-day or every 90 days. There is no such opinion as to Dr. Davison. Backing up for a minute to Dr. Helge's report, in fact, you see that Dr. Helge has the opinion that the breach he claims is that Dr. Davison should have seen Mr. Nicholson every 180 days. There is an attempt in the appellee's brief to tie into that by saying that somehow there's a link between Dr. Helge's report, Dr. Rushing's report, and that somehow that turns into an opinion as to Dr. Davison. It does not.
Isn't the number of days really, does that even, I mean, I'm not seeing how that matters because he wasn't seen at all, correctly? I mean, he wasn't seen at all, so it doesn't matter if he should have been seen 90 days or 180 days. Because he basically went this five-year period receiving these mailed prescriptions of Adderall.
I think where the 180 days or the 90 days matters is that is raised by the opinions of the two experts. They're giving their opinion as to the standard of care. And so they raise the issue of whether it should be the time period in which he should be seen. In truth and in fact, Mr. Nicholson was seen at various times in the record reflects, and looking at the expert reports, which is really all we can look at under the Four Corners rule, he was seen at various times. So whether or not the 180 days or 90 days matters or doesn't matter, I refer to it because it's in the expert reports, and it's them setting the standard of care. But either way, there's still no reference to a causal link. And because of that, I believe this is a case not of a insufficient report. This is a situation under the case law which we've cited of a report with a missing element under Jernigan versus Langley, under the Apodaca opinion. Because there is a missing element, the appropriate remedy is dismissal. I would point out that Dr. Helge or Dr. Rushing could have made a statement like the statement that was made by Dr. Helge as to causation. Nothing prevented him from doing that. And for those reasons, I would ask the court to reverse the decision of the trial court.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Smith. You know, you have less than 2 minutes now. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll just take a second. I represent the Davison Clinic. It's my understanding from reading the petitions, and I think it's confirmed in reply point 10 of the appellee's brief, that there are no direct liability claims against the Davison Clinic. All of the claims against the Davison Clinic are based on vicarious liability or respondeat superior. And because of that, if Ms. Smith is correct that the reports are deficient as to Dr. Self, which I believe she is correct, and if Mr. Lunningham is correct that when you take them in combination, the reports are defective as to Dr. Davison, then there's one doctor that is not here today, Dr. Markow, but the same arguments that apply to Dr. Self apply to Dr. Markow. And in our objections, the Davison Clinic's objections, we raised the same type of objections that Dr. Self raised. We raised the same type of objections that Dr. Davison raised. So the only point I want to make is if the reports are not good as to Dr. Davison and Dr. Self, they're also not good as Dr. Markow, there's no direct liability claims, and the claims against the Davison Clinic should be dismissed.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Cottingay.
May it please the court. Good morning, counsel. The plaintiffs have timely and properly supplied the defendants with, by my count, out of two reports, 13 pages, single space, plus two CVs that fault these defendants for operating a prescription mill without monitoring the patient for the effects of the amphetamines they were prescribing once a month. According to the defendants, these two reports constitute no reports at all, and that they all should dismiss my case and sanction me personally. Well, the trial court didn't agree with them then, and there's good reason why y'all shouldn't agree with them now. Let me first respond to the allegations that this case should be dismissed because my experts aren't qualified. If you look at 74-401-A2, an expert is qualified if he's, one, practicing medicine at the time, and, two, has knowledge of the accepted standards for the care diagnosis or care treatment diagnosis of the illness or condition involved in the claim. The condition involved in the claim is the failure to monitor prescriptions for Adderall for the treatment of adult ADD. Section 74-401C says, in determining whether or not a witness is qualified, the first inquiry is whether or not that witness is board certified. Well, Dr. Rushing maintains a board certification in internal medicine. I submit to the court that a board certification in internal medicine qualifies a expert to render standard of care opinions as to how often an individual needs to be monitored while he's taking a prescription amphetamine. And evidently, Dr. Self feels the same way about that qualification, because that's what she holds herself out as being, according to the Texas Board of Medical Examiners, is an internal medicine specialist. Well, I can't go out and find, as these defendants seem to be trying to contend, an expert who participates in a prescription mill scheme who prescribes amphetamines for people that respond to infomercials for adult ADD over a five-year period who only see their patient two or three times, maybe. Those experts are hard to find, and I submit to the court that the law doesn't require me to be that specific on an expert witness. Dr. Helge is, as the CVs indicate, is a licensed clinical psychologist. I think that Dr. Davison is a clinical psychologist. They at least refer to him as such in their briefs. Dr. Helge indicates that he's familiar with, he's got patients that are receiving Adderall for their ADD. He treats them. He's familiar with the standard of care on how often they need to be seen and evaluated. So I submit to the court that Judge Davis didn't buy the argument that these experts weren't qualified. He believed that they were, and I think there's good reason for that.
What about their claim, though, that Dr. Rushing is lacking in any other substantial training or experience in a related field relevant to the claim?
That's piling on, I think, Your Honor. He indicates that he's an internal medicine specialist. He is qualified to know the effects of amphetamine on the individuals as an internal medicine specialist. I don't think he has to be an expert in the treatment of ADD in order to know when an individual that's taken that narcotic should be evaluated and what evaluation should take place. It's a basic evaluation on cardiopulmonary systems. Has he lost any weight? It's a fairly simple analysis and doesn't necessarily have to be at the level to address the ADD.
Counselor,
yes, Your Honor.
The appellants contend that expert who Dr. Helge testifies or provides a report as to Davison is not qualified because he does not practice medicine. He's a clinical psychologist and does not provide health care.
Their complaint about there being an absent causation element of Dr. Rushing's report, is that the question?
No, that Dr. Helge is not, because Dr. Helge does not practice medicine, that he's not qualified to give an expert report.
You're absolutely right. If all I had was one or the other, I believe that I would not have a viable Section 74 report against all of these defendants.
So would you agree that Dr. Helge's expert report should be stricken?
No, sir. Well, no, sir. Absolutely not.
But you concede that he's not qualified to provide a report.
I would concede that Dr. Helge is not qualified to render a causation report by himself. But I submit to the court, when you take these two reports together, as I'm entitled to do, I think, under the rule, under Section 74, both of those reports read together give me the basis, and I think that's what Judge Davis was relying on, was both reports together give me the basis for being able to proceed.
Well, counsel, do you have any authority for that proposition that the trial court can consider a non-qualified expert because there's a report that is given by a qualified expert?
Well, yes, sir. I think Chapter 74 says that that you can look at both reports. Let's see if I can reference it here.
Well, if it's in the statute, we'll find it.
I have a suspicion you would, but it is specifically in Section 74, 351, subsection I. Nothing in this section shall be construed to mean that a single expert must address all liability and causation issues with respect to all physicians or healthcare providers, or with respect to both liability and causation issues for a physician or healthcare provider.
But I think that provision assumes that the expert referred to in that provision is an expert that would be qualified under the Act.
Well, yes, sir. Dr. Helge is qualified to, I think, to opine as to the conduct, and I think he can even render opinions about causation. But Dr. Helge's report standing alone doesn't get me where I need to be. But when you put the mirror image with it, with Dr. Rushing's report, then according as I interpret this, it looks like I can rely on both of them, and the court can rely on both of them to conclude whether or not that I have met my burden under the statute.
But so without Dr. Helge's report, you don't believe that you'd have an adequate expert report as to Dr. Davison?
Correct. Now, let's look at the reports, if I may. The two reports, and we've just been discussing some of that, these two reports these reports combined do what a report is supposed to do. The appellants would have you believe that this is that, I think, what I've seen referred to in the mostly the dissents, as the rare bird of a report that doesn't, that isn't a report. Well, this report, both of these reports, identify standard of care. They identify violation of standard of care. They accuse. They advise these defendants of what it is that I'm complaining about. As the standard of care violation, it's, you know, you have to see a patient every 90 days if he's on prescription amphetamines, every 180 if you're a PhD. They identify the violation, seen maybe three times in 5 years, once by Dr. Davison. As to the causation, you know, it's the causation issues in this case are really simple. And in spite of what the defense may try to do, they're not entitled to complicate an uncomplicated case. The causation, in contradiction to what the defense counsel says or the appellant says, the causation opinions are based, are reasoned and based in fact. Fact, Mr. Nicholson was given a prescription of amphetamines by the defendants monthly for 5 years. The standard of care opinion on that is that a patient receiving the amphetamines that we've discussed, it's got to be evaluated every 90 days, and the evaluation is identified in the reports as what needs to take place and also what needs to happen at 180 days. A fact that's relied upon in the report, Jim was seen, you know, maybe three times during that period of time. The causation based on facts that's specifically identified in the reports, that the failure to see Jim and evaluate him in a timely manner as referenced in the report caused him to develop an amphetamine addiction that went unchecked to amphetamine psychosis. The reason basis that is identified in that, in those reports is had he been seen in a time and evaluated in a timely manner, his amphetamine addiction would have been treated before he, you know, he got to amphetamine psychosis.
What about their complaint that Dr. Davison is not specifically discussed separately in Dr. Rushing's report?
Well, as I was addressing with Judge Casey a while ago, if you take both of those reports, and if you'll notice in a lot of cases, those reports are mirror images of one another. When you combine the two of them, Dr. Helge goes through at the length of describing what Dr. Davison should or shouldn't have done. Dr. Helge goes through and identifies delay in treatment as being a cause of the injuries that this man suffered. When you put the two of them together, then you can identify, you can see what it is that we're complaining about. And I submit to the court that with both reports viewed in that light, that we've done what we were supposed to do under the statute. But, you know, however, if I have missed something, you know, you guys tell me. I forgive the vernacular, but if the court would advise me of where I'm wrong on this case, if these reports need tweaking, I'll fix them. That was the same thing I said to Judge Davis downstairs. Evidently, Judge Davis didn't believe that these reports needed fixing. And I submit that that opinion of Judge Davis was based on this case with these defendants, with these facts, with these reports. We respectfully submit to the court that Judge Davis didn't think either of these reports needed fixing based on the simple operative facts that these two reports combined accomplish what reports are supposed to accomplish. And that is, it makes these defendants aware of the conduct that we're complaining about and allow Judge Davis to correctly conclude that these claims have merit. And just in support of that, I'd just say that if this court is sitting here thinking that, you know, maybe Cotton Game has or Cotton Game does have a righteous case this time with this case, with these facts, then the report has accomplished what the report is supposed to accomplish. I'll also submit to you that these defendants know what conduct we're complaining about. And For those reasons, we respectfully submit that this court should affirm what Judge Davis did in the court below, and I will give back to the court or answer any additional questions that the court may have of me. Thank y'all.
Thank you, Mr. Cottingain. All right, who is going to argue and rebuttal for the appellants?
I am, Your Honor, briefly, hopefully. The reports of Dr. Helge and Dr. Rushing are not mirror images of each other. Specifically, the report of Dr. Rushing only has opinions on the standard of care as to the physicians. The report of Dr. Helge has an opinion as to the standard of care for Dr. Davison, which is absent from the report of Dr. Rushing. Dr. Helge, an unqualified causation expert, by rule and by law, does make a statement as to causation under, as he says, in reasonable psychological probability, an opinion that cannot stand up under Chapter 74.
Counsel, have you had an opportunity to study our opinion, Norgaard versus Pingle? It was handed down in August of 2009.
Your Honor, I was in that case.
You were in
so
that case.
So I have had a chance to study that.
How do you distinguish our holding in that case that a licensed professional counselor is qualified to give an expert report from this case?
Well, it's two different. It's apples and oranges.
Okay.
I'm not arguing that a psychologist cannot give an opinion in a case, but 74.351 R5C states that the only provider, the only person who can give a causation opinion has to be a physician licensed to practice medicine. A psychologist, a licensed professional counselor, any other, a physical therapist, any other provider cannot give that causal link by law. It is extremely clear in the statute. So when we're talking about causation, that is the rule.
Even if the defendant is a psychologist, you're saying that only a medical doctor can render an opinion as to causation.
Yes.
Whereas a psychologist could give an expert report that presumably the report itself is to provide standard of care deviation from the standard of care and how that deviation caused the injury, correct?
I mean, well,
those are the components of an expert report.
The psychologist cannot make that final causal link. The psychologist, nurse, LPC, physical therapist, occupational therapist can all give opinions as to the standard of care, but the law, the Chapter 74, says that we're going to require that a physician make the causal connection to the medical harm. And that actually is not really new law. That is just codified, I believe, codified from a lot of law that we've had over many years. But it is clear in 74 that they intended to make that specific requirement that you have a physician. So if you look at Dr. Rushing's report, it's simply not there as to Dr. Davison. In their briefing, and I think Mr. Cottingham conceded today that link is not there in Dr. Helge's report and that standing alone he doesn't get home as to Dr. Davison. In their briefing, they try to bootstrap and say, well, there's an opinion as to the Davison Clinic, but the court needs to understand the only contentions in this case are respondeat superior contentions. So there still has to be a link between some practitioner's conduct. And Dr. Rushing is still only talking about the conduct of physicians, does not touch on the conduct of psychologists.
Well, let me ask you a specific question about the report, because in Dr. Helge's report, he's in paragraph 2 on page 4, he talked specifically about Dr. Davison and the Davison Clinic, and the standard of care is that they failed to examine and assess Mr. Nicholson every 180 days in appropriate and timely manner during the entire approximately 5 years he was seen twice at the clinic and possibly a third time. And then it goes on to say the causal relationship in paragraph 3 between the failures to meet the standard of care and the injury and damages based upon reasonable psychological probability. And then it goes on and says that the failure to assess him every 180 days, he suffered an addiction to amphetamines due to that failure and developed amphetamine psychosis. And then when you look at Dr. Rushing's report, he specifically ties that the same conduct, the very same conduct, the failure to assess and monitor to the resulting addiction. So why can't those two reports be combined? Why isn't the standard of care basically, it is the same. I mean, it's the same to monitor and assess whether it's for the medical doctor or for the PhD doctor. And why can't that causation opinion expressed in Dr. Rushing's report apply to both?
Because it doesn't specifically say, Dr. Rushing doesn't say that Dr. Davison's, the psychologist's, failure to see him within any prescribed period of time is what caused the harm. He specifically, Dr. Rushing specifically, refers to the 90-day time period. So when you've got multiple providers, and you've got multiple providers in different specialties providing different roles in a case, the law is clear, I think, under the opinions of Garcia versus Marichalar and Austin Hart that I've cited to the court, as well as Jernigan, that you can't lump them all together and say, well, the physicians, as they've done in one of these cases, or the surgeons, or the practitioners all missed it or didn't do this. Those cases stand for the proposition that you've got to be specific as to each provider. And in reading those cases, when they leave out a provider and do what Dr. Rushing did here, that is, talk about them in the factual section and then don't talk about them in the causation section, it leaves the court to fill in gaps. And this court has written on this very issue in Collini that we are not to speculate and to fill in those gaps. And that was what would be required of this court.
So you're essentially saying that because the psychologist stated that that there needed to be a 180-day monitoring of the patient, and the medical doctor said there needed to be a 90-day monitoring, that we've got a conflict or we've got some missing element as to standard of care, that neither report can't be reconciled. Is that
as to Dr. Davison?
As to Dr. Davison.
Because as you can imagine, you've got a situation where you've got Dr. Rushing, who, if Dr. Rushing's opinion is, well, the physicians who are the ones prescribing the medication, the psychologist doesn't prescribe it. Those physicians, in his opinion, should see him every 90 days, then that's their role and what they are supposed to do. So it doesn't mean that if someone else who was in someone else's opinion, Dr. Helge's opinion, supposed to see him in 180 days and didn't, that doesn't necessarily mean that that failure caused harm. It doesn't mean that. So therefore, someone has got to say that failure caused harm, and here's how it caused harm. And there is no reference at all in Dr. Rushing's opinion to that, or how that 180-day miss by the psychologist caused harm. It could have been there. There's no reason it couldn't have been there. And that's why we believe that this is
established. Except for the fact, getting back to my earlier question, you've got an expert, a medical doctor expert, and you've got a psychologist, and they're both testifying as to standard of care as to the same defendant, and you've got a conflict, and I still have a problem with the idea that if Helge is qualified to render an opinion as an expert or to give an expert report in a healthcare liability case, why he was not also qualified to state both the standard of care and how the breach of that standard caused the injury. But
because the legislature said so.
Well, if you have any case law that might interpret that provision that you're referring to, that would be helpful as well, counsel.
Be happy to look for that, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate all counsel coming here this morning to present your arguments. So the case is submitted. We're going to take a brief recess for a panel substitution change and then call the second case on our 9 o'clock docket. Thank you.